Hello and welcome to the 15th episode of Is Podcast Ko Kya Naam Do? 15 episodes, my God, I'm completely unable to believe the fact that we've actually reached 15 episodes and iska pura shrey, as in credit, goes to all of you guys. Thank you so much for subscribing to our channel, watching our videos, leaving such insightful comments that sometimes we read what's written and we're like, oh, we didn't even think of this. Radhe, you know I'm talking to you. You and your essay page comments, I'm sure there's a fan base for that. But yes, now talking about someone who has watched our podcast twice over is the Nainital disaster. You all have not heard about her, but I have met her on Tumblr and she is an ardent fan of this podcast. Jo sunke mera dil pigal gaya. My heart literally melted to know that we have such a wonderful, sweet fan and someone who is very intellectual and has some amazing points of discussion when it comes to discussing IPK. So therefore, we realize that today for Janmashtami's episode, we will be having a guest with us who is the Nainital disaster. First of all, lovely username. Give us some context on that.
Hi, everyone. I'm the Nainital disaster. And context for this username is I absolutely love the Nainital kind of segment of Is Podcast Ko Kya Naam Do. I think it's got the angst, it's got the comedy, it's just all around my favourite. And whenever I'm feeling sad, I always come back to that scene. So here I am, the Nainital disaster.
Lovely. So this is the first question that we ask everyone. First of all, thank you so, so much being a part of this podcast. And the first question is, how did you stumble on IPK?
So growing up, my family is very much the Star Plus kind of family, you know, from like 7 until whenever the shows all ended, we used to always watch them. And then when Is Podcast Ko Kya Naam Do started, I thought, oh, how interesting. And then I kind of watched the first episode and it was so dramatic. And I loved it. I was like, I am here for this. And then I watched a second episode and there was the Dory scene. And I was like, oh my God, this is Indian television. I couldn't believe it. And, you know, watched the rest of the show, loved it. And then, you know, kind of, I didn't realize there was a fandom around Is Podcast Ko. I was just kind of like in my own world thinking, oh, it must only be me who's like still in love with the show, like 9 years on. And then during lockdown, I discovered the fandom again and I was like, oh wow, and kind of stepped into the fandom like Kushi did in Shantiman for the first time, and here I am.
Well, welcome to the IPK world. You're never late to join it. We are ardent fans. I myself watched the show like 3 years later, but I think what you said is so right. One of the most interesting aspects of IPK is the way it started. It started so differently, so dramatically, and it did not have a cliche introduction of you know, the characters. Like, you know, in other Star Plus shows, you'll have the female character being introduced while she's doing some kind of puja or aarti or dance or singing, you know, with the side shots with like birds chirping in the background. And the guy is like having a nice sweet entry and we get an introduction of, hey, these are all the characters and they're going to slowly mingle. No, we bam, started between somebody demanding dowry and like, you know, Kushi trying to run away and fix that up and Arnav having that helicopter entry, which it is so novel. It's kind of like, it's a story that's been told before. Like we have the gap between a really rich guy and a middle-class woman, a very Darcy, Lizzie kind of a situation, but that they just started right in between plot is what I think, it was pretty much an attention grabber. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's one of those shows that it was a blink and you miss it kind of thing, you know? Everything, every scene was so relevant. There wasn't like any extra detail. It was just, you know, action, action, action. And then the action was so dramatic and you're just like at the edge of your seat, kind of just, oh, is Kushi gonna get to, you know, her Jijaji in time? And then, you know, the whole Jajaji scene that happens with Arnav, and I'm just like, oh my God, revelation after revelation. And I think it really hooks you in from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. Lovely, lovely. So How did you stumble onto this podcast? I really have to know that.
So when I first joined Tumblr, I came across Patti Sari's blog, and from that I think I saw one of your questions, and I was like, oh, this Jalebi wears Bluetooth sounds very interesting. So I clicked on your blog and I started following your blog, and I was like, oh my god, the attention to detail is insane. Like, you know, you came up with such points that I was like, oh my god, I can't believe that someone could even think like this. And then I saw that you posted that you were starting a podcast, and I was like, oh my god, even more IPK content, this is great. So then I, you know, like as soon as you started posting videos, I was like, okay, I have to watch them, I have to listen to them. And so like whenever you post, like I literally know when you're like uploading, and then like if I've got something to do, I'll kind of do it like while I'm listening to the podcast. So yeah.
Ribs and I are so grateful to have someone like you listen to our show and today be a part of it. Like, absolutely grateful for that. Thank you so much for giving your time, genuinely, genuinely. So, today's track, guys, today we are going to be talking about Janmashtami. It occurs over 6 to 7 episodes in the show. We are basically, and it is a track by itself. It's like kind of like a mini track, like the guest house. It's one event, but it's covered over multiple episodes. And we are going to talk about how Khushi's family is invited for Janmashtami, how the whole event goes, and Arnav literally dropping Khushi to her house. And then we are going to discuss about what we liked. Yes, what we liked, because there are quite a few things to dislike. So we're going with what we liked first. What we disliked, and today's point of focus is going to be the conversation Arnav and Khushi have in car, marriage versus live-in. Because this is pretty central to their relationship and towards their perspectives of each other. For the longest time, we don't know when they bridge that gap. We kind of know they somehow do right around Payal and Akash's wedding, where we know that they both care for the other's perspective, and their judgment slowly, like, you know, mellows down, and they both would reach a compromise. But you know that this whole thing, like marriage and live-in, and this whole thing is something that really forms the crux of the show, actually, because one thing that I noticed, and as you said, Fatih Sari had mentioned, is that the whole 6-month marriage thing, like, that comes a bit later. I think writers wrote that in a little bit later, because even in the dialogue, you can listen to it while dubbing, that Arnav actually tells Khushi to stay with him for 6 months. I think they amended that to a 6-month marriage. So you can understand that this whole complication of marriage versus live-in versus Khushi's values and Arnav's take on the whole world is incredibly interesting. So that is going to be a point of focus. But obviously, there's a lot to hate about this episode as well. But then, because we have a lot to talk about that, we will start with what did we like. So, Aditi Devabhava, our dearest guest first, please tell us what you liked.
Okay, so for me, the first thing I enjoyed aesthetically was the dream sequence. I thought the comedy was off the charts. I loved it. I thought it was very telling for Khushi's character that she's going through this kind of whole process of trying to understand what living is. And I am just dying at their expressions. I think the kind of overdramaticness of the expressions really cracks me up every time, the whole, because you would never imagine Lavanya to be the kind of person standing there with their hands kind of, you know, clasped, you know, please Jat Sahab, you know, that kind of thing. And then Arnav with his over the top stoicism, and when he says De Klunga, and I'm like, this is straight out of some kind of courtroom drama. I loved it. And the whole jalebi thing, you know, when Khushi gets distracted with the jalebi plate, I'm like, this is bang on Khushi. So yeah, that was, I think, my first kind of point. And I didn't realise first watch, but I realised this time round that Buaji is standing in the background with the balan, which I thought was hilarious. I thought, you know, the creators really you know, went to town, I think, with that particular sequence. And I think it's one of my most favorite dream sequences of the show.
Well, I have to contest that Arnav calling Khushi and Adeli's an auto rickshaw in that yellow and green sari kind of competes for the first position. Because she's like imagining him romantic her, but also be like, you know, Delhi ka auto rickshaw. But I completely agree with you. I think it's hilarious. It's absurd to its best. And it's also very well shot. Like the way it is produced, the way it's directed. And yes, Buaji standing as the Insaf ka Tarazu, the, I think, Lady of Justice, is hilarious because it fits Khushi's mind, as you said. One of the things I loved about this episode in general was the production of, I just found this to be very well produced, this series. Like, just the camera shots and everything was very beautifully done. And the whole Shantivan looked very pretty during Janmashtami, to me, I have to say that. It was absolutely stunning. And some of the other technical aspects that I liked, I really loved Khushi's makeup and hair, invoking Rid's words. Sanaya looks amazing even in like a sack. So, in a paper bag. So that woman is drop dead gorgeous. I think they really enhanced Khushi's beauty by her really like, you know, faded kajal, and green is literally Khushi's color. It's Sanaya's color. She just pops out like, I don't know, she pops out like fresh, I don't know, fresh grass, like beautiful. And talking about like, you know, Khushi's absurdity, and this part is where, you know, the writers are intelligent because they know that Khushi's reaction is coming from a place of lack of knowledge and being a bit naive. So, you know, her dream sequence is dramatized, and talking about drama, I love that moment where Khushi is talking about Raja Kans and Arnav just storms into the room, and it is so dramatically done. Like, that dude makes an entry to his own house. Like, the doors, they fling open, Arnav walks in that slow motion, and like the wind is blowing on his face. Like, he walks in with a little storm. It's so well directed because it also shows us how Khushi sees the Arnav. And then she ends up to pointing at him when she talks about the villainous Raja Kans. Was, I think, all props to, they really started nailing the comedy in these scenes, because it's unintentional humor that fits in so well. And Arnav's face is just like, excuse me, Moon, what did you call? Like, he knows enough about Janmashtami to exactly know who's Raja Kans. Like, he knows enough about, like, you know, Lord Krishna and everything to know about Raja Kans, which is basically, if anyone does not know, then Lord Krishna is basically an avatar of one of the three supreme gods, Vishnu. And it's kind of written, and Raja Kans is kind of like a demon king who knew that his sister's child would kill him because he's an evil man. So basically, he kept on killing all of his sister's children until Lord Krishna was born. And then he did some miracles so as to, he kind of slipped out of Lord Krishna's hand. So, but then Lord Krishna eventually just manages to kill Raja Kans because what's written is written. So I think it's very funny because, and also ironic, because on one hand, everyone's comparing, like, you know, Shyam to the lovely Lord Krishna, while on the other hand, Khushi makes this comparison of Arnav to the demon king. And we all know that in reality, the situation is very different because it is Shyam who kills his own child. And, you know, so it's a very, again, intelligent writing. It really reflects.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wrote the Kans Mama scene as well. I thought it was, you know, brilliantly timed. You know, I'm literally just wondering how many takes they did for that bit to be like perfect, you know, with the expression and, you know, the timing and the pointing and like the little hitchkey that Khushi does when she realizes that she's actually pointing at Arnav. I think comedy in like this like particular track, I think overall is impeccable. I would say the awareness that they have when Arnav comes back with the like stuff were unmatched to me, and they kind of both stop in their tracks, and there's that wind, and I'm like, oh, mira dildo. It's just, I think, one of those scenes that it's very subtle, but it kind of adds, you know, overall, it kind of builds up to that, you know, awareness by the time they get to that, you know, remarriage and stuff. And I think this is how you tell that they're softening towards each other, you know, that the kind of harshness, I think, around the edges of their relationship, at least, is kind of melting away slowly, slowly, but it is happening. And then, of course, the infamous Rabbabe, which, oh, honestly, mera dil, you know, it just, the tucks are happening everywhere, I think. And I love how they set it up. Like, in terms of, you know, how mommy, you know, the butter drops, it's, and then Arnav slips on it, and it's a whole thing. And, you know, it's not kind of out of nowhere that they kind of fall into each other. And I think that's what makes it kind of effective, because those emotions are still kind of there from the awareness, and then they collide, and it's all romantic. And, you know, the flowers are falling, and the yellow jewelry falls as well, and it's also aesthetically pleasing. I think it's really pleasing to look at, and I think it's very enjoyable because of it.
I agree, again, 100% on it. All these Rabbabe moments, none of them are shot. Like, the editors and the cinematographer is very careful about how they use their frame rates and slow motion. So you don't have some random edits giving close-ups. You actually have a close-up. You do not have an excess of slow motion. Like, you know that for the actors were staring at each other's eyes for a certain period of time. Yes, it was slightly slower than real time, because Rabbabe is always like this 1 second that's suspended in air, because they're feeling those emotions. I have this theory that a Rabbabe actually lasts for like 2 seconds, but this whole extension is what goes in their minds of how they're viewing each other. So even here, what I really like is that everything is happening in almost real time. So you know that there is a deep impact, like how closely they're observing the other person. And it does not look too fake, because I remember watching some of the shows that came out in 2017. Again, IPK3, I have a bone to pick with, not because Naya is not there, it's because the editing style that they used is like, whenever Chandni would fall over Advay one, they would have God knows what style of editing those flash edits, and then they would really like crank up the frames per second rate and the slow motion to such that I don't know whether or not the actors are staring for the long time, but you can see like how slowly Barun blinks, because the whole thing is in slow motion, so you kind of don't enjoy the moment because it kind of looks fake. It kind of, you know, crappy Instagram reels where they add an unnecessary slow motion and to give an effect where you're like, I would have had more effect if this was in real time. So I think one place where what I really love about IPK's production is that they really don't start extending the slow motions right until the last 3 weeks of the show, and we don't talk about that. That was a mess. We don't talk about that. But yeah, I think that was beautifully orchestrated. I think I just loved all the Rabbabes over here. And this little slight moment when the diya is about to go off and both Arnav and Kushi, like, you know, guard it with their hands, and they both just stare at each other for this 1 second. And, you know, first of all, background scoring is so good to seamlessly blend in the Rabbabe. It does not start in anywhere. And I really like that they always begin with a touch of the instrumental, so you know Rabbabe is going to come in. And the way they both just look at each other for that one moment, it sells the romance really well, and you can suspend your disbelief to a certain extent that yes, you know, these two people are working. And you're very right about the awareness that builds up that makes Diwali very believable, because it's kind of like, wait, these two people are about to kiss when he is very much in relationship with another woman. It sounds very weird on paper, but because of these little, I think, of these little Rabbabes, you kind of buy into it that these people are subconsciously and slowly, gradually, consciously, immensely attracted to each other. And talking about two people being in love, I love Akash and Payal. our beta couple. They are a visual treat. First of all, Akash in that kurta, mind-blowing. Dude looks so good. And I really like it that Akash is the one character who actually tells Payal that I really love the sweets you brought before. I only wish Akash also told that to the rest of his family, especially his mother, and made sure that they got the payment done. Like, again, wasted character and actor is Akash Singh Raizada and Akshay Dogra. Completely wasted talent. But I think even in those little scenes, there's such a brilliant foil to Arnavid Khushi. They're so different. It's a relationship found on friendship and respect and just mutual admiration and puppy love. And I love that one moment where Payal has, like, you know, some bit of red powder on her cheeks and he's just guiding her to wipe it away. And that interaction, first of all, I love their background music, and that interaction is so soft, so pure, that even later when Buaji is just echoing our sentiments throughout this whole Janmashtami track, that even later when Buaji tells Akash that, are you and Arnav brothers? Like, from which angle? I was like, Buaji, kya baat? Mugi baat chhin li. Exactly what's running in our minds. So I really loved Akash and Payal. Well written, somehow believable. Like, even though, like, we often laugh that Akash and Payal literally decided to marry after like 5 meetings. But somehow these 5 meetings, especially this Janmashtami one, you could see a very deep bond forming between both of them that is invisible in front of the dramatic passion that Arnav and Khushi are sharing.
Yeah, I think 100% I would agree. I think it's almost ironic in a sort of sweet way that for us, you know, Akash and Payal are the, you know, beta couple, but for the people in the show, for the longest time up to like the Bash wedding and stuff, they're the alpha couple. And I think that dichotomy is very interesting to kind of see play out, because for, you know, the characters of the show, they would never imagine Khushi and Arnav to be together, you know, be in love and have a, you know, a solid relationship. Whereas for us, we're just sitting here observing every rabawi with like hearts coming out of our eyes, you know. And I think, like you said, with the scene with the plate when she's, I think, removing the sindoor or something, I think it's so sweet to watch. And it's one of those kind of evergreen kind of moments that, you know, he's, you know, looking at her, he does the kind of, you know, action, and I'm just like, oh, it's so sweet. And I think it's a nice reprieve from the kind of dramatic relationship that is of Arnav and Khushi, because obviously with them you have the intense moment, intense moment, intense moment, maybe something else, and an intense moment again. Whereas with Akash and Payal, it's just very much sweet and mellow and very, there's a lot of terav, I think, in their relationship, which I think is beautiful to watch.
Yep. Another quick thing that I really like was Lavanya Sari. She looked gorgeous. Like, Lavanya looks gorgeous in all her outfits before she starts wearing Khushi 2.0 version of clothing. Her current sari was absolutely pretty. Loved it. And then just small other things. I love the way her family, like, you know, Khushi's family stands for Khushi. I love it how Buaji is seen supportive. She's like, it's okay, you can leave this work. You don't have to do it. I love the way Payal is, like, you know, defensive. Like, you know, she's really defensive about Khushi. And I think I just really liked this family dynamic. Like, this looked like Khushi's family. They're concerned for her. They're worried about her. And they'll do anything for her. Like, you know that if the Raizadas misbehave with Khushi, which they do on multiple occasions, you do see that Buaji and Payal would literally murder everyone happily. So I think I really love this family dynamic. I liked that the Raizadas finally knew that they had to apologize, but I'm not the biggest fan of their kind of apology. But just saying, I just love Buaji. I love the fact that Buaji has a grudge. I love that Buaji's response to Anjali's apologies, like, I don't know whether I can forgive you, but I can at least, whether I can understand what you're saying, but fine. Like, just know that I owe you by the virtue of forgiving you, which I think is the correct response to how Anjali had kind of forced Arnav, I mean, forced Khushi to work in the family. And I think in general, I'm trying to see so I don't slip into my dislikes already. I'm just saying that in general, I liked all of these scenes. Yes. I will save the other thing, what I like for you, because I know you love that scene. But one other thing that I absolutely love is that Khushi demands an apology from Arnav, which is brilliant, and it is unfortunate that we don't see it enough. In fact, I just got an ask from someone who asked me that Nupur and Khushi are very similar. Nupur from Milej Ab Hum Tum. And like, you know, what's the basic, like, you know, your take on the show? And I always feel that Nupur is a more independent version of Khushi, like more fleshed out as an independent woman, irrespective of a romantic relationship. And one thing that I always love about Nupur from Milej Ab Hum Tum is that whenever her self-respect would come at stake, she would demand an apology irrespective of what. We don't really see that from Khushi. We don't see her demanding apology from people when they have hurt her. We see her like crying or having teary eyes in the corner. We don't see, I mean, I understand shock. That's one thing. I understand a person being too shocked to even speak. What happens during, like, you know, when Lavanya calls for the police, I can understand that Khushi, as someone who's probably never faced the police on her in her life, I can understand why she would be shocked to silence when that would happen. But I don't understand why she would not demand an apology in other situations. But over here, I love it that Khushi's like, Khushi breaks Arnav's entitlement. She goes from because he literally abandons her in an unknown place, which is a classic abusive behavior, abandoning a person, like, you know, leaving them in a place where they don't know. And that too, this is Delhi. And that too, this is late at night. Like, dude, what were you thinking? Do you not read the newspapers? So I really like it that Khushi tells Arnav that he apologizes to her instead of showing that he's giving any kind of, like, you know, he's being kind by still choosing to drop her home, which I think is a very good way of breaking Arnav's entitlement. And it breaks, like, people will say that, oh, he kind of cares for her because he's like, you know, he's still choosing to drop her home. And Khushi just cuts through that bullshit. She's like, no, you better apologize to me. So I found that genuinely very beautiful. Again, I find it very upsetting that the next day she, like, you know, the whole pranks, all of that she only does because Payal was sad, as opposed to Khushi being upset over the whole scenario. Again, we go back to Khushi switching to living for other people. But I think I really loved that one scene. And talking about the whole police thing, I think this is literally the first scene where I like Nani, because throughout Janmashtami, this is the first time where Nani treats Khushi and her family as equals. We see Ariza attempting to treat the Gupta as their equals. We see Nani's invitation to the Gupta family as a way to, it's actually a covert way to just patch up things, to be like, no, you're not working for us, you're kind of like family. And I really like the way she defended Khushi in front of the police. Am I happy that it happened at Lavanya's cost? Not exactly. But at least there is one character who sees Khushi as an equal and does not think that they did anything great by doing something good for Khushi. Like, that is one thing I keep on noticing amidst the Rise others, is when they do something good for Khushi, they feel like, oh, we're such great people. But over here, Dani is like, no, this is just unethical. So with that, I am almost done with all that I have to like. I will now hand it over to you before I talk about, like, Shyam and his lovely dramatic swag. Like, dude's so dramatic, I just love him.
I think what you said is 100% valid and correct. I think Khushi's ability to stand up for herself really comes through, I think, in these kind of episodes before, I think, Diwali. Because I think after Diwali, she's a bit broken, a bit hurt by what Arnav does, because that's more of a personal thing against her, in that she feels that way. But I think here, the fact that she, you know, demands an apology, I think it's very right of her. She's still got the essence of that resignation scene, because she, I think, at this point, which, you know, hands down, I'm a fan of that, you know, I always will be. And I think the fact that Nani stuck up for her, I think, in itself, I think it's a good thing to do. You know, she doesn't win particularly many brownie points in my eyes because of her other behaviors, but I think, you know, and the fact that she does say, you know, I trust her more than anyone else here, I think, wow, you're really, you know, going for it, aren't you, to kind of protect Cushy, which, you know, I'm here for, but I think because it was at the expense of Lavinia, I think the moment's a bit dampened for me. But I would say, can I come into my favorite bit of the entire track? Jackie piecing. I think that entire segment is comedy gold. I think Sanaya's physical comedy really comes to the forefront. And I think to sort of embarrass yourself, you know, playing drunk, you know, it's kind of hard to do, I think, you know, trying not being scared of how you come across on camera and really kind of just going for it. And I think kudos to her. I have to give her credit for that. I think here is kind of where we see how she tries to, you know, make her sister smile, and she really cares for her. And I think that that dynamic was really sweet to see, I think, after the kind of dramaticness that was the whole police episode and everything that happened beforehand with the car riot. But I will say that when Arnav pulls up outside and he's watching through, I love seeing the expressions kind of change on his face, because he's relieved, then he's angry, and then it's almost sort of anticipation kind of look on his face. He does this again during the New Year bit when he's waiting for Cushy to turn the lights on, and it's such a sweet expression on his face. Like, he's kind of waiting for Cushy to realize that he's outside, and when she does, he's gone. But I think it's very sweet to see that kind of change in his, you know, decorum, I guess.
Varun and Sanaya are, in my eyes, the finest actors on Indian television I've seen. Like, one of the reasons why IPK stands out is because their casting was impeccable. Varun and Sanaya, they're genuinely good actors, and this has nothing to do with the fact that they're jaw-droppingly beautiful people. Like, I look at them and I'm half in love with them, and then they act and I'm completely in love with them. But they're both such good actors. Like, as you rightly said, Sanaya's comic timing during the whole Shole scene. The Shole scene has been used multiple times in Indian television as well as Indian movies. We've seen it being recreated. It's such an iconic scene. We've seen it be recreated at least 10 times in other places. But still, the way Cushy does this, I love it. She takes the role of Dharmendra, of Veeru being all suicide. But I just really love it because she acts so well. And I just agree on everything that you say. I really like it that, especially like while editing and directing, they made a very careful note that Arnav does not see Shyam. He does not see Shyam. So I'm just like, huh, you guys made sure of the fact that Shyam is not visible. Not that Shyam has any dialogues when Arnav is there. So I did find that very interesting. And because she's just like, Sanaya switch from comedy to romance is like in an instant. And it's so beautifully done. And talking about Shyam, dude, that dude's my favorite. Like, literally, he's so dramatic. I laugh whenever I see Shyam, because I'm like, yes, this is drama queen. Guys, the dude's going all for it. Like, especially when he starts doing that aarti and that dramatic turn of camera, I'm like, is he invoking Lord Vishnu in himself? Like, what's happening? I can't stop laughing at that. But even at this point, one thing that I really like about this episode is that you see Shyam growing as a villain. Like, up until now, you know that Shyam has an interest of Cushy, but to what extent, you don't know that. You know that he sees Cushy as someone he'll probably be in a relationship with, or has dreams of being in. You know, he has fantasies about her. You don't know to what extent it will go. But what I found, like, while I was laughing when he's doing the whole puja thing at home, there's this conversation that Shyam and Cushy have, an absolutely wonderful, again, the one person who's talking beautifully to Cushy is Shyam at this moment. It's this wonderful conversation where he's like, Cushy, tell me, talk to me. Like, I can completely understand why Cushy would trust Shyam, because Shyam is actually offering to be a genuine friend. Like, he's not so close as Payal, who's upset herself too much in the situation to talk about it, or Buaji, who will jump immediately to, like, there's this one person asking Cushy how she felt and how how is her day going? And she does not have many people in her life who do ask that question. So I completely understand the friendship between Shyam and Khushi. And I hated the fact that he's a villain when he was being such a good friend to Khushi. But when Khushi talks to him about what all Arnav did and she walks away, Shyam breaks his cup of tea and swears some sort of revenge on Arnav or the fact that he make Arnav pay for his deeds. And I was genuinely, positively taken aback by that because I did not expect that was the direction of Shyam's character. Like, I did not expect, like, it was like another card revealed to me. Like, we finally understood that Shyam is just not an immoral man who's led astray by a pretty face. No, there's something a bit sinister about him. And this is the first time I get to know that there's something sinister about him. And that he's viewing Arnav as the enemy because of how he behaved with Khushi. And I was like, ooh, I did not see that. I really did not see that.
Yeah, I think I would agree 100% with everything you've just said. I think this whole kind of track, they kind of start it off with the slight hints here and there that he's very manipulative, you know, when he's kind of trying to stop Bhuvaji from going to Shantivan in the first place, and then he's very angry, and then that kind of switch when he speaks to Anjali on the phone, Ronnie's like, I was just about to call you, and you see that kind of almost split personality, but you can tell he's putting on a facade with whoever he talks to. And then like you rightly said, in the scene where he's, you know, so sweet and, you know, almost like butter wouldn't melt in his mouth with Khushi, and as soon as, you know, she walks away, he's kind of out of sight, he completely flips. And I think, you know, credit to Abbas, I think, you know, for pulling off that kind of, you know, duplicitous act. I think, you know, like, as we said at the beginning, the casting is impeccable. I think, you know, every character really got into the skin of the role and really, I think, made it their own. So hats off to Abbas, I think.
Yep. And after giving our immense love to Abbas, now it's time to talk about what we did not like. Not at all related to Abbas. The first thing that pops into my mind when we're talking about Shyam is, it starts over here, but slowly and gradually, I get tired by how the family misses out that Shyam is being obviously missing. Like it's a lot of, I honestly, if there's ever an opportunity, Rid said this, is that I do want to talk to the writers and just want to ask them off screen. I don't even want to record it. I just want to ask them that how did they ever expect Shyam to be revealed? Because he honestly does not do the best job of hiding his, like, you know, path. He still does, like, it's still pretty well written that any of, like, him being missing or his name Shyam and Khushi's tenant's name is Shyam, we see that matching up. We see it can be a very harmless conversation. But, like, you know, I'm slowly and gradually, I'm starting to get it in my, like, you know, get a bit pissed about that. How come they never really end up knowing that Khushi's Mangetar is Shyam Manohar Jha? Or how Khushi never ends up getting to know about Anjali's husband when the whole topic is about marriage and Anjali talks about her husband, like, at length. I always understand Arnav's reluctance to believe Khushi right away because he's like, my day talks about Shyam Manohar Jha day in, day out. How did you not understand that? And she apparently has that massive photo frame of her and Shyam, which I think now starts disappearing. Like Shyam, does Shyam travel with that photo? Is a question that I have. I mean, it's still not the internet, social media age that I could understand that Khushi would try to look up Shyam on social media. But I'm still surprised at how does Khushi not understand who Anjali's husband is. And it starts over here. Like, over here, I'm still buying into Khushi not getting it. After a few episodes, I'm like, come on, dude. Like, what are you asking us to believe? And that quickly jumps to a few other things that I did not like. We're staying away from the car conversation because that is our point of focus. But I will say this thing, that the way Arnav behaves with Khushi in the whole car, irrespective of their marriage, like, you know, taking the marriage thing out of context, is 101 abusive behavior. Like, it is the manual on how to be in an abusive relationship. This guy, completely terrible, because not only does he drive fast, like, you know, rash driving, when you're with another person, irrespective whether or not Khushi's afraid of speed, it's still an intimidation tactic. Whether Arnav is doing it consciously or not, it's an intimidation tactic. Then abandoning Khushi in the middle of the road, that is always unforgivable. Like, you have a certain responsibility. I do not care that he goes home and he calms down. A lot could have happened to Khushi. Like, one thing that I'm very upset is they don't treat Khushi as an independent character. And you see that slowly and gradually happening over here. Like, Khushi is insulted so as to Arnav can go back and realize that, oh, he did something wrong and I should have not dropped Khushi. But they really don't show how difficult it was for Khushi to reach her home in Delhi. Like, you would be afraid if that was at the evening time. And this is like midnight. So literally, this is where I had difficulty coming to terms with Arnav's behavior. I was like, I don't care how good looking you are, how much of repentance you have when you're at home. You have issues that needs to be sorted at a psychiatrist. And we do see this in the way he behaves with Lavanya. It's a very small scene, but you understand that the way Arnav behaves with someone who disagrees with him is very toxic, because he also grabs Lavanya by her arm. It hurts her, and he like literally drags her to his room and yells at her when he learns that Lavanya planned with Khushi to bring him to the temple. His anger was justified, his actions no. Like, physically, his aggression is just terrible. And I did not like that. I do not like that he's not held accountable for those things.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you there. I think the way the creators have kind of framed Arnav's character is very much, you know, he gets triggered into something, he behaves, you know, apparently, then he realizes that he's messed up, and then he'll do like a half-assed apology. But at the end of the day, we're supposed to, as the audience, you know, eat that up and think, oh, he's such a great guy because he realized his mistake. But the mistakes he makes aren't ones to be made in the first place. I mean, regardless of how angry you are, you do not manhandle another person, you know. Regardless of how angry you are, you don't leave a woman by herself on the roadside and then kind of intimidate her into almost thinking that you're going to run her over as well. I think, you know, the level of toxicity, I think he, before he's even near another female person ever, you know, he needs therapy, you know, at the very least, you know, because we get the kind of hint that there's a lot of, you know, untreated, kind of explained trauma there. But then, regardless of anything, it doesn't justify his treatment of other women, especially those that are kind of in that kind of power dynamic where he's in a position of dominance in comparison to, you know, the woman. Because even Lavanya, up until a certain point, she is still his employee, you know, in the office space. But then he tells her, you know, job or home, and it's been like, really, Arnav, really? You know, that's the one thing I did give him credit for at the start, that I was like, no, he's not sexist in that kind of way. You know, he values Lavanya for her expertise in her career. But no, because it turns out he's just as patriarchally inclined as the rest of them.
Yes, I think that's very well put. I have nothing more to add. That's absolutely well put. And coming to the other Raizadas now, because if I talk about Arnav, we'll just be in an infinite loop. His behavior is problematic, period. And it should not be romanticized. If anyone romanticizes Arnav going back to Khushi because he loves her, I will smack them personally. I will be like, nope. That is a very wrong behavior. Thank God Khushi made home fine. Not that it makes anything better. It's just that my tendency to kill Arnav is just a wee bit reduced. But yeah, coming to the other Raizadas, I think I really don't like the way they apologize. I really don't like the way they make up to the Gupta family for the repeated insults. Anjali forcing Khushi to work, Khushi getting insulted in public. It's, I won't blame Lavanya entirely for that thing, because the Raizadas have also showed her that it's acceptable to behave with Khushi that way. I'm just saying. Like, Lavanya knows that she can behave with Khushi in this way. That's it. And like literally the only person to yell at Lavanya is Nani, and Lavanya interprets it because Nani just in general dislikes Lavanya. No one actually tells Lavanya that what you did was ethically wrong. And Anjali is just like, Lavanya, how could you? Lavanya, how could you? Take a stronger stand, woman. You're capable of taking it. Like, the way you dressed down your brother during the guest house episode is one of my favorite Anjali's, where Ajay just tells Arnab on the face that it does not matter whether or not you knew that the building was about to collapse. You sent her there, you're responsible. I really miss that Anjali. I really miss that Anjali. Like, I could have truly forgiven Anjali if during this whole police thing, instead of just being teary-eyed, she told Lavanya that, with whose permission did you do this? Like, if Anjali was cold and she respected Khushi and she actually took a strong stand, I would have been with her. Because what I absolutely disliked is, one, Mami being happy. I mean, Mami was still there in her character, so I expected her to be happy about it. But after such a big event, there is one, no compensation. Like, literally no sort of compensation apart from asking the other people to be of a bigger heart, honestly. And Anjali literally concludes that entire horrific incident with being like, let's all forget this and do the puja. And I'm like, Lord Krishna will come down and be like, what the hell, woman, did you not learn anything from me? I was shocked when Anjali did that. I'm like, can't you take a strong stand? Why are you not taking a strong stand? I really disliked that. I really disliked how everyone dealt with that situation. Only Nani rocked. I hated that it's at the expense of Lavanya though, but yeah, that apology was terrible. It's kind of like, we are bigger people than you, but still we are folding our hands before you, even though we are way more influential. That should be enough. And in my opinion, it's not. They should have tripled Khushi's salary and given her easier working hours and invited the family for lunch the next day. You know, that's genuine, what is that word? That's genuine repair. That's an attempt to an honest apology, not just folding your hands and then allowing her to, I don't know, still making Khushi's life difficult.
Yes, I think I would 100% agree with you here again. I think this is kind of an ongoing problem with the Raizadas and Khushi. The level of unprofessionalism, I think, just permeates through, you know, even the office track with Arnav's actions, and even here, you know, the kind of half apology, half non-apology at the beginning when, you know, the Gupta family first come into the, you know, into Shantivan, you know, when she's like, I'm sorry, but I had to do this for, you know, Lavanya and Arnav. And it's like, you know, say sorry, you know, that you regret your actions and let it go. You know, don't try and justify, you know, you're barging into someone else's house, threatening them with a contract, and then, you know, expecting everything else to be okay. And then even when, you know, when Anjali tells, you know, Khushi to stay over for Janmashtami, it's meant to be a really sweet moment. You know, when Nani says, you know, I think all your holidays will be spent in Shantivan, you know, and he was thinking, oh yeah, foreshadowing. But it's also underlined by the sheer level of unprofessionalism. She's saying that she wants to go home. You know, she's an employee of yours. You know, if she wants to go, she can go. You know, she's not obligated to stay here. You know, because she even says it doesn't look nice. And they're like, oh, no, nonsense. Yeah, it's nonsense for you because you're in a position of power as opposed to being in a position of being someone's employee. You can't say no. Even when Nani brings Buaji, how is she going to say no? You know, her niece is working in their, you know, house. How is she supposed to say anything else but yes? And I think the fact that they kind of put the Gupta family in that position of, you know, a rock in a hard place, I think is very unprofessional. And, you know, that kind of trajectory kind of leads even all the way up to Diwali as well, you know, when they kind of force Khushi to disregard her own family and her own time for, you know, the people at Shantivan. I think in the guest house, Khushi says, you know, your personal life is your personal life and I have no zindagi. And I think that very much still applies here with the rest of the Raizadas, because her personal life and her wanting to celebrate festivals with her family is completely disregarded because they need her to train Lavanya, when it's like, Anjali is meant to be like the epitome of sanskar and values and knowing all the riti rivas. And if something goes wrong, then why can't she tell Lavanya, oh, that you've gone wrong or something? Why does it have to be Kushi doing it, you know? Like, she, her job is to explain and then, okay, you know, and it's Lavanya's job to then implement, not Kushi kind of holding a hand and doing everything for her, if that makes sense. And I thought that was very wrong of the Rise Dadas.
Oh my God, you are so well put. Like, yes, 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 yes. You're so eloquent. Like, I'm just saying yes a billion times over. And I also, like, as someone who has been taught all the sanskars given IPK standard, I'm always surprised at the sanskars they choose to teach Lavanya. Like, why are you upset that Lavanya does not know the story of Lord Krishna, when Lord Krishna himself tells you not to judge any other person? Like, you don't know his teaching. Yes, you know that who his mother is, his aunt, his uncle and everything, but you have no idea of what other morals and principles this god preaches to his devotees. I found the teachings very shallow. I don't know if it was intentional, like they were showing that how ironic being orthodox is that you only know the stories, you don't know the values and lessons behind it. But it's also like, I did not understand how they judge Lavanya for not knowing the difference between two kinds of vegetables that look identical, between not knowing a certain, like, you know, a certain mythological story, not knowing things like that, when she's evidently been born and brought up in a completely different environment. And I found their judgment to be telling a lot about the kind of sanskar they have, to repeat Australian Desi's words. But yeah, I think that is, I just don't like the way they judge Lavanya in this episode. And talking about judging Lavanya, I hate the way they judge Arnav in this entire episode. So what if he's an atheist? Like, that's literally my question. What if he's an atheist? Why are you forcing him to... It's not that Arnav is someone who is secretly very, like, you know, devoted to God, but just refuses to act on it because of a certain trauma. Like, first of all, people's relationship with their God changes with time and age every now and then. That is evident. But it's never like, it's not like Arnav wants to celebrate, but just forbids himself from doing so because of his own vow. And Anjali's like, nope, I know my brother loves celebrating festivals, so I will make sure that he's out of, like, you know, his own bound vow. That's not the case. Arnav is truly an atheist. Whether he's lighting a birthday candle or a diya for a Janmashtami makes no difference to him. So I hated how everyone was trying to gain up some sense of superiority by forcing Arnav to be a part of religious activities. I found that so... I am very... I'm a Hindu and I am very devoted to my gods and goddesses. I love them. I don't do daily pujas and stuff like that, but I love them and I absolutely, like, you know, I believe in every one of them. But there's nowhere in my teachings have I been raised to force someone who... My own brother is an atheist. And I never force him into, like, you know, into any of these pujas myself. And I find it so weird that it is an acceptable trait to force a person into religious things because you follow them. And that's very ironic and opposite to what the texts of our religion says, because I don't think any religion speaks about forcing other people to participate in it. That's orthodox mentality. If you read it very carefully, there's no book written that if you don't believe in me, make sure your entire family forces you into believing in me. No, it's on a much more philosophical level than it is literally. So I find it very troubling. I find it that so weird that the whole family is happy and Nani's impressed that, wow, previously Lavanya, I was the only one who irritated my grandson, and now that you're irritating him as well, I approve of you. I didn't get, like, Kushi thinking she hit a sixer by switching off all lights and having Arnav light a Janmashtami candle is, like, beyond me. I do not understand that sense of orthodoxy, and I don't know why it's celebrated.
I keep saying this, but you make such valid points. I think 100% I agree with everything you've said thus far. I think I have two problems with the way that they kind of approach the whole religious kind of pushing forward of, you know, ideology almost. The first is when Kushi is explaining like the story to Lavanya, and she uses such like shuddh Hindi, and I like to think my grasp of Hindi is somewhat okay, but you know, the way that she was describing the story, I think clearly this woman does not know half the words you're saying, and you're still kind of going on in the same track. And it's not as if, you know, Kushi's English is so weak that she can't, you know, loosely at least translate some of the more, I don't know, difficult ideas or something, because even I found that kind of really hard to understand what, you know, she was saying. And then the kind of dirty looks that, you know, Nani and Anjali were kind of giving Lavanya when she's asking questions, like, clearly you've brought, you know, Kushi into your household to teach, and the person who is learning is meant to ask questions. That's how it works. You know, that is the entire basis of teaching and learning. You know, you ask questions, you get more knowledge. So her asking questions or not knowing certain things is nothing bad. It's after, okay, if she's, you know, been taught something repeatedly and then she gets it wrong, you might be a bit wary and a bit, you know, oh, why don't you understand it still? But when she's learning something for the first time, you know, give her a break, give her some credit. She's trying, you know, and they don't give her that. And I think, you know, what you said about, you know, Arun being forcibly brought into the puja, I think, you know, because she learns this, I think, quite late, you know, into the show, that it's not okay to kind of push your beliefs onto other people. And I think once she learns, she's okay with it. At this point, she's very still set in her ideas. And, you know, she doesn't kind of see beyond this kind of boxed vision that, you know, I have this belief, why doesn't everybody else have this belief? I think Arnab is similar, but from the opposite direction, that he has his beliefs, why doesn't everybody else have this belief? And I think, you know, Kushi manipulating someone into, you know, coming to the puja, manipulating Arnab. If anything, if she had tried overtly, maybe, you know, actually asking him to come to the puja, maybe if he says no, he says no. There's no harm in asking. But then manipulating someone to coming downstairs and then acting like you've, you know, done something that you should get a medal for, I think is very wrong. And I think it's very wrong that we as the audience are meant to think it's okay. I think if there was a sign that this is problematic, this is also wrong, then we, I think for me, that would be more digestible as a moment. But then you have Arnav's anger, which is justified, but then his actions, which are not justified whatsoever. And again, the whole kind of, you know, curry spins. And again, it's Arnav's fault only. But whereas it's Kushi who started it in the first place by, you know, and it's such a backhanded trick. Honestly, I think she learned most of her tricks from Bollywood movies. You know, the kind of whole, you know, switching the lights off and then he lights the diya and it's, oh, you know, it's Bhagwan ka ishara. And I think if it's not an ishara for Arnav, I think, you know, it's an ishara that you've put there. So I found that very problematic and difficult today.
Yeah, staging an ishara is not an ishara. It's like Sham putting sindoor on Kushi and being like, oh, we're meant to marry. And Buaji be like, oh, okay, cool. Sometimes, like, you know, we keep on wondering what would have happened to Buaji if she saw Arnav and Kushi on Teej. She'd be like, get these two married right now. There's sindoor all over them. There's mandir right nearby. They'll figure out the rest of their lives later, because that is Buaji's plan for getting people married. I think we're going to be broken records of this. We just stated that we completely agree with each other based on what's happening. And yes, you know, I could have understood Anjali's efforts if they showed that Arnav refrained from participating in any of the festivities because he chooses to grieve for his parents' death and therefore restricts himself in activities he finds enjoyment in only because his parents are dead. And they died during an event. I often feel that Arnav, I mean, he lost his faith in God because of his mother's suicide. And perhaps she died on a day that had a lot of, like, you know, festivity on it. Arnav just does not like festivals. So if it's stemming from trauma, I, for one, don't see how Anjali is not being supportive of him and telling him that Arnav, you should move on. Like, I am very okay with those scenarios where Anjali is asking Arnav to do something only because he has not moved on from something and she wants her brother's trauma to be dealt with as opposed to continuing to live with that trauma. Like, I'm very okay with scenes like that. But I'm not okay with Anjali doing this because she, like, you know, Anjali giving... See, Khushi gets the courage to do all of this with Arnav also because the rest of the family enforces on her that it's absolutely okay to do this. Like, Khushi does not know that Arnav's mother was someone who also loved religion, believed in God deeply, and then committed suicide and things like that. Like, I think when Khushi learns about Arnav's mother's suicide, she really changes how her opinion of Arnav and how he views other things. Like, at that point, it's very okay for... We are not talking about what happens during the second Janmashtami. That does not exist. But she really becomes much more okay with how Arnav deals with religion because then she knows that it comes from a very personal point of trauma. And you understand that when she tells Buaji that what matters is Arnav's love and respect for the family as opposed to any sort of ritual or tradition that needs to be completed. And I feel like Khushi understands religion better when she talks about religion in that perspective. You're not so defensive about your religion if you actually know about it. So I just find I find it very weird that they really don't deal with the fact that Arnav's refusal to participate also stems from his trauma than him just being an atheist because he does not believe in certain things. Like, there's nothing wrong in being an atheist. I think, I just find very problematic that they do not delve further. Like, we could have had sentimental moments between the brother and sister where Anjali is like, it's not that, you know, if Anjali had a scene where she's like, I know you love these festivals and I know why you don't participate in them. And Arnav would be like, this has nothing to do with mom. And Anjali would be like, no, this has everything to do with mom. And then she takes, like, you know, she takes a promise that no matter what, she'll bring back Arnav to what he enjoyed in. But then right now, it just feels like you're forcing a guy and I don't like it when they force Lavanya to do anything. I don't like it when they force Khushi to do anything. I don't like it when they force Arnav to do anything. In general, I just don't like any of these moments when a particular party is being forced to do anything against their wishes. And then again, like, IPK follows this pattern where Khushi does something wrong, but then Arnav does something so much more worse that you don't focus on whatever wrong Khushi did. And it's this unhealthy pattern that keeps on going on and on and on and on. And I think, honestly speaking, from my perspective, that's where a lot of my issues are, that you're calling it Janmashtami, but you're not. I mean, if you're so into religion, maybe the writers did this on purpose, but you are not actually talking about any of the values that Lord Krishna actually imparted through the, like, you're celebrating his birth, so why not talk about his values, which have a much more, I think, egalitarian feel on a modern perspective than on a literal perspective. So I think that concludes everything I disliked about this track. Do you have anything more?
I do have one last point. Firstly, again, 100% agree with everything that you've said. I will say that the conversation right at the beginning in the Raisa the house, when Manorama's, you know, excited for Janmashtami, like, you know, they're kind of setting the day, you know, today's Janmashtami, and the kind of whole, you know, roundabout way that she's saying is Janmashtami, like, obviously Lavanya's not gonna know, you know. I think, and it takes Anjali to actually, you know, come out and say, you know, it's Janmashtami, this means that it's Lord Krishna's birthday, Lord Krishna's our god, that, you know, Lavanya understands, because no one else is correcting Lavanya when she's making kind of almost, her assumptions make sense in a way. I mean, if you're saying that someone, you know, plays the Bansuri, you're going to think, okay, musician, like, you're not going to automatically jump to, you know, Lord Krishna until you know about, you know, the kind of association that's, you know, there, because no one, the audience, I don't understand why the audience kind of leans into this as well, you know, the kind of whole Lavanya bashing. Because, you know, everything against Lavanya, we're supposed to see as, yes, you know, Lavanya's this, she's bad, she doesn't understand the, you know, birth stories, she doesn't understand the gods. But how would she know? That's not her lifestyle. You know, she's like, the way that Khushi wouldn't understand everything about a Western lifestyle, Then how can Lavanya understand everything about, you know, the kind of Sanskari, quote unquote, this kind of lifestyle when she's not never been a part of it? And the fact that the writers are so impatient with Lavanya, like they don't give her the time to grow and to learn. They kind of push everything onto her and expect her to know everything, you know, from the first day. And I think reality doesn't work like that. You know, kudos to Lavanya for making an effort, at least, you know, to try and learn about what's happening. But the way that, you know, Manorama, even like she's meant to be on Lavanya's side, but she also takes the mic quite a lot. And, you know, when she kind of folds her hands, she's like, you know, I think she says something along the lines of, you know, hey, like, you know, Krishna Tirilila Prambare or something along those lines. And it's like, why don't you explain properly to Lavanya what's happening instead of getting Koshi to come and train her? Because, you know, where's Manorama Sanskar? Where's Anjali's? Where's Nani's? Why do you need to employ someone else who is younger than all of, you know, the four the women of the Raizada family right now to explain to someone else what the Sanskara? Why don't you know the Sanskara? Why can't you know, impart that wisdom and knowledge? Why does it have to be Koshi, who's barely, you know, got experience of the world herself, you know? So yeah, I think that would be my final kind of dislike. But I think that's a dislike that, you know, started, you know, in the con like at the beginning when Anjali brought the contract, you know, thing forward up until, you know, the end of that kind of whole segment, because I just don't understand the logic behind bringing Kushi in to do this training with Lavanya when Lavanya is older and wiser, you know, in many respects. All the other three Raizada women, you know, are meant to be all, you know, Sanskari and everything. Why are you bringing, she's 18, she's a literal child. You know, what experience does she have of the world? You know, so yeah, I'm getting really worked up about this, but you know, I think, but yeah, I would say that if I could, I would either make Kushi older or have her segued in to the Shantiven household in a different way, as opposed to training her.
You know, I just imagine Buaji showing up to work where she being like, yeah, my child is like 18, so she does not know all the sanskars. I'm here to teach Lavanya about everything. Imagining Anjali's reaction and Nani being like, huh? And she's like, yeah, I like had a very happily married life because she learned all the sanskars from me. She's an 18-year-old child. She's pursuing college. She has other things in life to do. So I'm the one who's going to be teaching Lavanya all the sanskar. Yes, Lavanya, where are you? I don't know how I just never took into consideration that because she's literally younger, the youngest person in the house. I think it's, and you know, there are so many missed opportunities. I always felt that Lavanya and Kushi could really bond over them not understanding the other's language completely. Like, you know how NK and Lavanya bond together when NK defines what's a cocktail and Kushi's like, what? Murgi ki pooch? And when Kushi, like, you know, explains the difference between a gulab and a julab, then NK's like, they both sound the same. Like, I really love, like, you know, where they both have this problem with translation. So there's a lot of missed opportunities with Kushi and Lavanya. And honestly, this is the one place where Lavanya genuinely makes a mistake. Like, this is the first time where I could look at Lavanya and be like, yes, I hate you. You were very petty to do that. But again, it's all really brushed up. And this is one character growth that I could have seen, like a character like definition that I could see in Lavanya, that she can get very petty if she feels she's insulted. But they really don't explore that, or they don't have Lavanya realizing why that's like, it's kind of like for a person to, first of all, she's instigated by mommy. That's there. Mommy plays such a big role in misguiding Lavanya. Nobody knows that. And secondly, is they don't have Lavanya learn from it. Like, they really don't treat Lavanya as a character because this experience means nothing for her. And yeah, Lavanya's whole treatment in Shantivan about not knowing about traditions is similar to a person should know how to fluently read, write, and speak Mandarin only because they know the language exists. And that's literally Lavanya's state at home. And now I think is the perfect point for us to switch into a point of focus, which is this massive debate Arnav and Khushi have about marriage and living. Thoughts?
I think the argument, I like that it wasn't the first thing that was brought up, the whole marriage versus living debate. You know, Arnav still got that anger from the Aarti simmering, and you know, he's finally kind of got Khushi in close quarters and he can question her. And you know, he asks her a simple question, I think, but because the anger is still forcing his reaction, you know, everything kind of just flies off the handle way too quickly, and you know, they're kind of just trading barbs almost. And you know, I think at some point they kind of start arguing for the sake of arguing. You know, my point is right, you know, I think marriage is better, or I think living is better, and they forget to listen to the other person and what they're trying to say. And I think that's more evident when Arnav, you know, tells her to get out of the car, because he's not stopping to listen, she's not stopping to listen, and you know, it leads to a very destructive kind of environment, which I think at some point it was going to happen. I think they have way too much to say to each other, and I think way too little scope to get there. So I think this argument here is a good foundation for them to actually understand the other person, because they have this argument, they can think about what's been said, and then not move on but find a way to progress from that, which is the only highlight I can pull from the whole argument, that they can find a way to actually understand each other's perspective in hindsight. But other than that, everything that they're saying to each other, it's not so much what they're saying, it's the way they're saying it. It's very toxic. They're not intending to explain their perspective to the other person, they're just trying to get the other person to back down. It's very much a battle of wills. And you know, kudos to each other to continue that, you know, gusto. But again, it's very toxic, I think.
I think one of the things that took me by surprise in the argument is that both Arnav and Khushi say such valid points. Arnav is like, I live and let live. What's the problem with that? Like, yes. And he's like, I'm happy with this relationship. I don't believe in marriage. I believe in living. Lavanya's okay with this. I'm like, it's a mutually consenting relationship. Like, Khushi, what's your problem? Why are you digging your nose in? And then I also really like where Arnav is like, who are you to tell me anything? And Khushi snaps with, aap kaun hote ho? Like, you know, she really questions that, with what sort of superiority is he taking this right to yell at her, which I think is very, very nice. And I really like it where Khushi breaks down Arnav being self-absorbed in this relationship and asking him that, how do you know whether or not Lavanya wants this as well? And I loved that point until when Arnav asks her the very good question that, who are you to talk on her behalf? Khushi does not report, like, Khushi's like, I'm a woman. And I know that as a woman, no woman would want to be in such an incomplete relationship. And I'm just like, you were going so well with the conversation. You were going so well, because Arnav was listening when she was making valid points. She's like, who are you to judge me? Who are you to yell at me? And he gets all quiet. And he's like, what do you think about Lavanya? And he's like, what about Lavanya? And I really wish that, I really like it when Khushi went to, did you think what Lavanya wants? And I wish she said that it was the correct time to show Khushi's maturity by saying that in the few days that she's noticed Lavanya, Lavanya expects more from the relationship. It's painfully obvious that Lavanya expects this relationship to go somewhere. But instead, Khushi generalizes her beliefs onto Arnav. And again, I don't have a problem with that. Like, Khushi's 18, right? So I think at that point of life, you believe that your set of values are the most right, and everyone echoes them. So I don't have a problem with Khushi actually saying, like, talking to herself. I have the biggest problem in the whole show trying to tell us that Khushi's right and Arnav is wrong in this scenario, when it's quite the opposite. Like, they're both right and wrong, but Arnav is more right in the sense that this is a mutually consenting relationship between two adults. The problem over there is that Arnav really is very absent in that relationship and does not heed much into what Lavanya wants. And Khushi is only right from the perspective that he has not really consulted with Lavanya on what is the extent of the relationship and is not taking the obvious sense that Lavanya expects something deeper from this relationship. But the whole conversation goes so awkward after that. And Khushi ends up telling Arnav that your parents also married. She went to his family. She went to his parents. That is not right. I hated that. I hated what Khushi said. How do you know what background other people have? And again, that whole thing gets brushed away because Arnav throws her out of the car. So you can't actually focus on the fact that Khushi said absolute crap.
Yeah, I would agree with you wholly with what you've just said. I think up until the point where they're exchanging valid points, they actually have, you know, a way to, you know, a way forward, I think. But at the point where, you know, they're just exchanging words for the sake of words, you know, because she starts, you know, she brings in, you know, Arnav's family. Okay, we sort of know the background that, you know, his parents, you know, died, they committed suicide. Because she doesn't know that. You know, even if, you know, his parents were alive, there is absolutely nothing right in bringing in the other person's family, especially when Arnav, his kind of words were very direct to Khushi. They were about Khushi, they were related to what was being said in the car for that particular topic. There was absolutely no reason for Khushi to bring in Arnav's family. And I think that's where, you know, she goes a step too far. And but then Arnav, because he reacts so extremely, it again flips in Khushi's, you know, favor that, oh, regardless of what, you know, Khushi said, Arnav should not have thrown her out of the car. But we can kind of see where his trigger point was. You know, he was arguing, he was angry, but he was fine until a certain point, you know, and then the mention of his parents kind of triggered him to that get out. And I think, you know, I think from Arnav's perspective, as all the information he's got from Lavanya is that she's okay, she's happy with, you know, a live-in relationship. She hasn't so far given him any kind of indication that she wants to marry him. And I think at this point, maybe they've been together 6 months. We saw their 5 month anniversary. Maybe it's been a month since then, maybe a bit more. But how can you know that you want to marry someone in 7 months? You know, that's just not how it works, you know, in normal television either. And in real life, I mean, that's the kind of getting to know you kind of stage, you know, finding out whether you are compatible in, you know, every sense of the word, and kind of seeing how the other person, you know, is growing, you grow, and then you can decide together if that's the future that you want. But 7 months is not that time, you know. At most, you know, if you say they've been together 7 months, it is way too early for them to even consider, I think, that kind of, you know, step, that if they want to be married. You know, I think, you know, Indian television really pushes that narrative of, you know, pehli nazar mein pyar hogi aur shaadi hogi, you know, that kind of thing. And that's not how it works. I think as realistic as IPK was in terms of its pacing, you know, especially with the Arnav and Khushi dynamic, they were putting very, you know, archaic expectations on Arnav and Lavanya. And maybe that's why their relationship was doomed to fail, because they didn't have that room to grow. You know, saath mein bhi kitna pata chalta hai, you know, about someone else, you know. And I think that was Arnav's, I think, flaw overall as well, that he didn't speak to Lavanya. But then Khushi's whole, because I'm a girl, because I'm a woman, I know what it's like to be, you know, I wouldn't want to be with someone if they didn't want to be with me in a marriage. And I think that hits Arnav especially, I think, because maybe he has considered Khushi in that light of, you know, maybe being with her in some sense of the word. And he, I think in his eyes, it's reaffirmed that she will not be with anyone unless it was marriage. And I think it also kind of brings the argument about back about to Kushi and what she wants as opposed to what Lavanya wants, which was what her initial question was. And I think Kushi gets so lost in her own kind of bubble that she forgets, you know, what the actual topic of discussion is and where the argument started and where it ended up, I think are two very different things. And no one expected a trajectory of the argument to go from, you know, how dare you bring me to the Aarti, to your parents are married too once upon a time. You know, that in what, maybe 10 minutes, they cover so much and their relationship is left in a worse, you know, position than it was at the start of the car ride.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Like, I hate the Kushi calls Arnav Saath Saath Rehne Vala Rakshas, which literally translates to a monster who prefers living in. Like, he's living in, therefore he's a monster. Again, like, I get it. It's something that Kushi does not understand. I also get Kushi viewing the people in a live-in relationship on a lower moral compass than hers. I get all of that, especially given, like, you know, the upbringing that she has. But outrightly judging and insulting a person because their lifestyle is different from yours is, it is like, it is pathetic. It's genuinely pathetic. And I just remember every time I watch that conversation, it just leaves me with a bitter taste. I think that's a very good point that Arnav realized. Arnav knew that he and Kushi won't have, like, kissing Kushi on Diwali would have been a massive commitment. Like, he knows that if they kissed, the likely outcome is that he should marry her. Like Kushi would not be close to anyone apart from the man she wants to get married. Like, that, and I completely get that. I think in Diwali they handled that complexities of that really well, especially because of just the way it was handled. But over here, all of us, I mean, I don't know. It's like, you know, when you hear certain dialogues, you think that whether or not they're written for the sake of the characters or the audience they're catering to. And I felt like a lot of the conversation was catered towards the audience, their ideal audience, as opposed to anyone. Because Kushi questioning whether or not, like, the fact that Arnav's parents also got married, is that she immediately, like, you know, revokes validation from single parents, from children born out of wedlock, from families that are broken, assuming that, you know, there are just so many other kinds of families in this world. And she literally disrespected multiple kinds of families just because, like, then and there she's just like, oh, how can you not believe in marriage? Your mother and father also, they're also married. And I'm just like, Kushi, how old are you? Because if you're 18, I find you and Arnav being in a relationship very problematic. And if you're 22, then I'm like, you need some growing up to do. Like, what's happening? I was very lost in that conversation. And I remember watching that conversation when I was 18. And okay, granted, I have a very different exposure of life when compared to Kushi, even though we're of the same age. Like, obviously, I live somewhere else. And my family is very different from Kushi's. But I'm also like, it was just very weird. And I think my biggest problem, again, is not with Kushi holding these views, because if she's 18, 19, I can understand people being a little bit egocentric at that age. But I don't understand, because the writers are not 18 and 19, right? So I just find it problematic that why are they trying to show that Kushi is right in questioning Arnav's lifestyle when she has, like, throughout Janmashtami, she keeps on looking at Lavan and being like, hi, you are forced in this relationship. I'm like, where do you see Lavanya being forced? Like, if at least Kushi had overheard a conversation with Lavanya, with her family or her sister, someone over the phone, and being like, well, I did want to marry ASR, but given his giving his take on marriage. Like, I'll be 70 and we won't be married. Like, I wish we saw Khushi Hearth somewhere, and then she can be on, like, you know, she can go on to still, like, unjustly batter Arnav with her own perspectives. But at least there would be some foundation to it, which in this case was absolutely not there. And then Arnav does some stupid shit, so I don't care about it. But one thing I feel in this whole show, if Arnav was ever right about anything, was his take on relationships. He's not a good partner, not at all, but it was his take on relationships, that what's important is that the two people involved in it are happy or not. I mean, I know the rest of the family also matters and they should be integrated on a more healthier level. Like, I don't believe that the family should be completely excluded. But he is far more right than Khushi is. Because with the way Khushi is going, then her being forced to marry Shyam is... Maybe it's ironic. Maybe they show Khushi that as someone who starts off being completely blind as to, like, you know, following marriage and then being uneasy when her Buaji tries to push her into one with the most obvious person is probably, like, you know, probably the writers intended on that. But yeah, I just find it weird that you're asking us to agree with Khushi. I don't agree with that narrative. They're both valid in their own points, but don't show Khushi being right. Like, they don't show Arnav is right. Like, you know, his idea to completely exclude family from a relationship, they don't show it in the most positive light. Likewise, it would have been really nice if at one point, which they slightly do with Payal, who keeps on, like, just questioning Khushi's advice to Arnav and Lavanya. I think at once she told Arnav and Lavanya that if those, like, you know, if Arnav and Lavanya don't want to come back together, then Khushi's no one to interfere in it. And with that, we understand that one, Payal is way more matured. And that is the first time the show attempts to show us that Khushi might not be all right about relationships. I don't think they do that enough. I don't think they pay enough attention in showing us that Khushi is wrong, especially in circumstances like this.
Yes, I would agree with you 100% there. I think the way that there's two sort of ironies that I found as you were kind of talking, that for all that we can say, you know, Arnav never spoke to, you know, Lavanya, because she didn't either. You know, it could have been like a side conversation of, are you happy in the kind of, you know, living situation that you're in? That didn't happen. So everything that Khushi is saying in that car ride is of her own opinion that she's kind of superimposed onto Lavanya, and is kind of talking on her behalf. And Khushi does this up until Lavanya leaves. She tries to kind of mediate between the two when it's not her place to. And I think that the way that they always make Arnav out to be wrong, I think it's very interesting, because, you know, he's meant to be, you know, the show is kind of on his perspective. You know, things are kind of happening around him, he's kind of just reacting to what's happening. And I think that the more we kind of learn about his psychology and the way he works, I think his actions make less sense. Because for someone who's got such clear-cut and well-developed ideas about how relationships work, the way his relationship works with Lavanya and the way his relationship works with Khushi are completely messed up and toxic. So it's kind of like he's got the theory in his mind of, you know, this is what a good relationship should be. You know, there needs to be communication. As long as both people are happy, it's all okay. You know, that's all that matters. But when it comes to his two respective relationships, what communication? Where's the communication? It doesn't exist. Because all they're doing is, you know, with Lavinia's case, you know, he's kind of assuming everything. And with Khushi, you know, he thinks that, you know, she's, you know, helping Shyam cheat and stuff. So that communication line is never open either. And even when they are communicating later on, you know, it's always, you know, besa aga, and, you know, the kind of arguments that began in the first few episodes. So he never learns how to kind of apply, you know, communication and trust and, you know, honesty and openness in his own relationships, but he knows that this is how it should be. And I thought that kind of reveal to the audience that he does know what he's talking about is very interesting, because then we can kind of, you know, look forward and see, you know, for all that you say and all that you practice, you don't you know, actually apply that to your own life. And I think Kushi is actually very much the same. You know, she says one thing, you know, live-in relationships are bad, this, that, the other. But in a sense, she is in a live-in relationship for 6 months with Arnav, because she's not fully married in the religious sense, which is what matters to her. And, you know, the entire remarriage track is opened up because she's not, she's in a living, you know, relationship with him. So I found that very interesting.
Yeah, no, I mean, oof, every time you talk, it's like an excellent analysis. And I'm like, yes, yes. How many more times can I say yes? Absolutely agree with you on multiple points. I think they intentionally intended for that irony to exist between Arnav and Kushi and their own marriage perspective, and all of that led brilliantly well. I don't know what happened later, but yeah, I think a lot of it really stems from like Arnav's dilemma with being excellent in theory and terrible in practicals is again a very practical problem. You will see that like sometimes people not engaged in a relationship have the best advice, or people having terrible relationships actually have the best outlook. Like very like a lot of people can preach but not practice. So it's very, very in line with Arnav. And it really troubles me that they don't explore it as something Arnav actively needs to work on. They just make it more like his characteristic. And that is problematic. Like he never realizes that he needs to learn to communicate, or that he cannot take single-handed decisions for his relationships, like, you know, him choosing to move in with Lavanya or choosing to marry Kushi, whenever, even the remarriage, Arnav takes a decision by himself. He never consults the other person. So that's never taken as something that he should learn about. So I think there are a lot of things where they just, they don't explore further as much as we would have liked to have seen them exploring it further. And likewise with Kushi. But yeah, I think that absolutely wraps up all the points. I mean, there's so much groundwork for the future episodes that's established in these few scenes. And yeah, like later in the show, second half of the show, none of us know what happened. But as of yet, Janmashtami was indeed a very interesting episode. And as the Nainital disaster very rightly said, I think the comedy is so great in some of the points that you just like, you can't stop laughing, especially when Kushi says Kans Mama and Arnav arrives right on the tee. So thank you so much for being on this podcast. I had such a good time listening to what you had to say. I think you are brilliant in your analysis, and I would love to hear more from you. How do you feel being here?
Honestly, like, thank you so much for having me. It's been like, you know, such an amazing experience, even listening to you talk and like actually having this kind of conversation about, you know, the good things and the bad things and the things that could have improved. I think it's a very important discussion that should be had, especially around the world of ITV. And, you know, I'm just so glad to be here. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Guys, do leave your love for the Nainital disaster below. I know you all loved listening to her as much as I did. Again, thank you so much. I cannot emphasize how many more times I'll say thank you for being here. Also, I can completely assure you that Ritz would be totally in love with you and with all the points that you had to say. So I really hope that you can join us for one of our future episodes. And we sincerely loved having you here. To all the people who heard us, I'm sure you guys also love this episode. So leave your comments wherever possible. We love reading them. And then be prepared for the next episode where, yes, yet again, we have another guest. And we really hope that you love the podcast. And yes, please help us reach 1,000 subscribers on YouTube before September, because that would mean a lot to us. Thank you so much, guys, and stay around and stay safe. Bye.